What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
You're not interested in art?
No.
Well, look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting. I'm Josh Larson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar.
Lady and gentlemen, start your engines.
Chris Hemsworth there, getting the 2024 movie year off to a proper diesel-powered start. That's from the trailer for Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, which comes to theaters in May.
Along with Furiosa, we've also been promised Dune Part 2, a new one from Richard Linklater, and Jake Gyllenhaal in a Roadhouse remake? Am I dreaming, Josh?
You're dreaming, and there's another Joker movie, Adam, your nightmare. Oh.
Okay, it's a nightmare.
It's our 2024 movie preview and more ahead on Film Spotting.
Welcome to Film Spotting. First, since we know all of them are listening, congratulations to everyone who earned an Oscar nomination this week.
Good job, everyone.
Yeah, as we're taping this, actually, those nominations were announced earlier in the day. We have thoughts, Josh. In fact, we had thoughts. We shared them. We did a little reaction pod that was our bonus show for the month of January, provided to Film Spotting family members who have access to the Film Spotting Premium and Premium Plus feeds. We do bonus shows monthly and had a good 35 minutes, 40 minutes of riffing on our reaction.
How do you feel it went? You were a little nervous. You had a busy day. You didn't have a lot of time to prepare. You just kind of got on the mic and reacted to the Oscars as if you were you were on E Live or something they were rolling in.
Yes, exactly. I can dream. It was fresh. It was fun. I think I'm going to come unprepared to every show from here on out.
I don't believe it for a second.
More information on joining the family and hearing that Oscar reaction pod is available at filmspottingfamily.com. This week, Sam should know better than to give me any French to pronounce, much less French to pronounce multiple times. We'll give it a go here. It's our 2024 movie preview, the Folie Deux edition.
Now, have we researched this?
I researched it.
Okay, good. Because I'm following your lead here. Folie Deux.
We figured since we're going to have to get used to saying that, as it is the subtitle of the Joker sequel due in October, we might as well just get comfortable. You did it once. You got another one in you?
Folie à deux. I think I'm only improving.
Okay. Yeah, you're only improving. What does that mean? Well, I did some research here. It translates to madness between two. Kind of sums up Film Spotting. As far as the Joker sequel goes, we can only assume it applies to Joaquin Phoenix's Joker and Lady Gaga's Harleen Quinzel. You learn something new every day. Had no idea she was in it, and that's who she's playing. I've blocked it out completely.
You didn't know Lady Gaga was in it?
No.
Wow.
No.
Okay.
But how does that all apply to a movie preview? Well, we're going Joker style here. Mm. Anything goes. It's chaos. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We're trying something a little different. I don't remember how many years ago it was, but we decided to start a new format for all of our previews, which was rather than just kind of doing the boring traditional countdown thing, we would pose questions about the movie year. And I thought maybe it'd be fun to go back to tradition and let's do it in a more conventional way. We kicked it around a little bit. Sam, our producer, our resident Joker, our resident chaos agent, came up with something a little different. And we've got 10 or so matchups here where we're going deathmatch style, thinking about it in terms of the incinerator, as we like to sometimes here on Film Spotting. Two films that share something in common, you have to pick one. So over the course of this preview, you're going to get to hear about at least 20 new films. And then at the end, we're going to share our top five most anticipated, our individual lists. You might get a few more. So just titles galore here on this 2024 movie preview.
Madness between two, indeed. I like it. Mm-hmm. This is going to be fun. Also this week, we're going to share some of our plans for 2024. We've got new marathons to announce, some sacred cow reviews that we're looking ahead to, and of course, Film Spotting Madness. It is just around the corner. Adam, I've been fitting in some 1950s movies that I'd never seen before, and I still feel terribly, terribly behind.
Yeah. Let's dive into our death matches, our first 2024 preview battle. We are going to do it this way. I'll start. I'm going to give you the titles. I'll give you a little tale of the tape. You tell me your choice. I'll give you my choice. And then we'll alternate. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. First matchup, Desert Adventures, big action movies, Dune Part 2, out March 1st, versus Furiosa, out May 24th. The directors, Denis Villeneuve, George Miller, the director of Furiosa. Here's a little plot description. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the known universe, Paul endeavors to prevent a terrible future only he can foresee.
Do you remember Paul's last name?
I was just going to say, Paul, of course, is Atreides.
Look at you.
Played by Timothy Chalamet. Here we go. Chalamet, Villeneuve, Folie de. We got French just coming out our ears. Zendaya, not French. Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Javier Bardem, among the returning cast members. We'll leave it there for now. Furiosa stars Anya Taylor-Joy, Chris Hemsworth, and the description is, as two tyrants wage war for dominance, Furiosa must survive many trials as she puts together the means to find her way home. Do you have a clear winner here, Josh?
A couple of ways you could go about deciding this one. Simply, which previous film did I like better? Fan of both, like Dune quite a bit, but I think Mad Max Fury Road, at some point we did a top 10 films of this century, something like that, and it had risen up towards the top of that list for me. So in that sense, Fury Road has it. Also, looking at the cast, and should note, there are new faces for the Dune sequel. Florence Pugh, Austin Butler, Christopher Walken, all three intriguing. I don't know if any of them are as intriguing to me as the addition of Chris Hemsworth to Furiosa. Not because I'm convinced it entirely will work. I mean, Mad Max Fury Road was of a completely different temperament than something like Marvel's Thor movies. And I love Hemsworth as Thor. Obviously, he has the physical stature to fit into a Mad Max movie, but does he have that tone, the tonal element? So it's both intriguing and maybe a little concerning. That said, my choice is going to be, and I think what I'm going to do as practice, I'm just going to, you know, say this preceding every one of my choices. Folie à deux.
Uh-huh.
Furiosa.
Furiosa. Okay. Well, here's the terrible future I can foresee. One in which we've reviewed both films on the show. I've rated them on Letterboxd, and I'm giving a higher rating and review to Dune Part 2 over Furiosa. I can see that. The bar.
Why would that be so terrible?
It wouldn't necessarily, but the bar for Furiosa is impossibly high. There is almost no way it even matches the achievement. Forget being better than it. It can't match the achievement, or I think it's going to have a hard time matching the achievement that Fury Road was. And then on the flip side, unlike you, I thought Dune Part 1 was just okay. It solved the cheesiness problem of Lynch's, and in the process also stripped it of all of its fun. Thought it was just a very serious, kind of dire, semi-oppressive Dune. And I understand why people appreciated the scale of it, but it didn't do a lot for me. So expectations relatively low, expectations way too high for the other film in this case. And then add to that the cast. As much as I do like Joy, and I'm a little bit worried about Hemsworth too, having almost come around to think of him as more of a comedic performer than an action star. But it's that Dune cast that would put it over the top for me, potentially, where you've already got the names I mentioned. Love Ferguson, Brolin, Bardem to go with the other two stars. But then you throw in Florence Pugh, Austin Butler, and Walken. Okay, you really have my attention. It doesn't change the fact, though, Josh, that if I can only see one, the film's Furiosa.
Correct.
It's my choice.
Correct. All right. In our world, there is no Dune 2.
No.
Moving on.
No, it's gone.
The next pairing is a prestige horror pairing. We have Robert Eggers' Nosferatu, which is coming out on Christmas Day, naturally, and Lee Whannell's Wolfman. That one scheduled more appropriately for October 25. So Eggers, we know from The Witch, The Lighthouse, most recently The Northman. Lee Whannell, we both really liked 2020's mm-hmm. The Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss. A surprise, I think, how much we liked that film. He also made Upgrade and Insidious Chapter 3. Nosferatu, I'm not sure actually if this is just a riff on the silent film from the 20s, which is excellent, or a straight up remake, but basically a gothic tale of obsession between a haunted young woman and the vampire who is infatuated with her. Bill Skarsgård is in this, along with Lily Rose Depp, Nicholas Holt, and Willem Dafoe. I love that. Wolfman, this is a man and his family. You know, they're terrorized by a lethal predator. You know the story. Christopher Abbott, who we last saw in Poor Things, and Julia Garner from The Assistant, interesting, in Wolfman. As you can tell, some of this I'm learning from these notes that, mm-hmm. that you and Sam put together here. So I'm doing a little live reaction choices myself. But where would you go with this pairing, Adam?
Yeah. What did you say about Wolfman? Something like, and you know the story.
You know the story.
You know where that's going to go. You know what? Actually, that's the case for Wolfman here, is that I don't know a lot of these classic monster movies, these classic horror films, and I have no idea genuinely what the story of Wolfman is. But as much as no one will ever confuse me for the president of the Robert Eggers fan club.
You're not going Eggers.
He's yet to fully win me over, though, as you like to joke. I mean, Sarah's already counting down the days till Christmas just to have the double date again.
Yes.
The Robert Eggers double date that's going to become a tradition.
Let's do it.
She can't wait.
Oh, man.
Drive to Chicago.
If only this opened when we were in Iowa City for Refocus. We could all go. Come on, Eggers.
I know, sadly. But who picks Wolfman here? I mean, honestly, who picks Wolfman? And like you said, I liked The Invisible Man. But Eggers is a singular director with a vision, and Nosferatu, and that Nosferatu incarnation of Dracula specifically has haunted me my entire life. So it might as well continue. And then the cast, which you mentioned, I like Christopher Abbott and Julia Garner just fine, but I knew Willem Dafoe was in this movie before I knew that Willem Dafoe was in this movie. Of course he is. He has to be. And you know, he's been in other Eggers films. He was, of course, so good in The Lighthouse, even if I didn't love that film. But Holt is a great actor. Lily Rose Depp is a very promising actress. Haven't seen her in a lot. Bill Skarsgård is what actually sells this one for me, Josh. I mean, besides the other things I said, I think even without Skarsgård, I would pick Nosferatu. But I think Bill Skarsgård is a real talent, a unique talent from the It films. Also really liked him in John Wick Chapter 4. So him being in Nosferatu is something that helps seal it for me, as much as it will probably scare me, even if it wouldn't surprise me if it was the case that Eggers isn't trying to scare anyone with his Nosferatu. Just the name Nosferatu gives me chills. So I'm in.
You know, you're right. Bill Skarsgård is a very appropriate choice for Count Orlok, this figure in this mm-hmm. film. But I'm somehow disappointed that that's not who Willem Dafoe is played. I mean,
I know.
When I think of the Max Schreck performance as Orlok, I can see Dafoe giving his own particular spin to that. I'm sure Skarsgård will as well. So,
well, that's a role he played already, right? Didn't he basically play Schreck?
Was that Malkovich? Wasn't that Malkovich?
I thought it was Dafoe. You're right. I know I reviewed this movie back when I was writing newspaper reviews as a grad student. Am I mixing up Dafoe and Malkovich?
No, you could be right. Let me see.
I could be right. I don't know that I am.
Man, these people make a lot of movies.
Shadow of the Vampire, I think the movie's called.
Yeah. I thought it was...
maybe it was.
Malkovich. Willem Dafoe is in it. He is Schreck.
I was right.
So he already did it. So there we go. Set that aside. That's why he's not doing it again. Thank you for saving me from emails. I'd still like to see him play Orlok.
Yeah.
You know, just give a second spin on it. But yeah, I do think this cast is definitely one of the reasons that most people would go that way. Who would pick the Wolfman is what you asked,
who
I
would?
Think.
Who would?
Yeah. Who would pick the Wolfman? So, folie à deux. Nosferatu.
All right.
Oh, we got eight more to go, Adam.
So. Yeah, we do. And I just noticed my little cough is coming through when I laugh. You can't make me laugh this show.
Sorry,
Josh. No one wants to hear me wheeze. Okay. Our third category we're calling queer thrillers. February 23rd, you can see Drive Away Dolls. March 8th, Love Lies Bleeding. The director of Drive Away Dolls, Ethan Coen. The director of Love Lies Bleeding, Rose Glass, who made the 2021 Film Spotting Golden Brick nominee, St. Maud. Drive Away Dolls, in search of a fresh start, two young women embark on an impromptu road trip, but things quickly go awry when they cross paths with a group of inept criminals. So Margaret Qualley's in this, Beanie Feldstein, Coleman Domingo, great cast, Pedro Pascal and Matt Damon. Ari Wegner, who shot The Power of the Dog and Zola, is the cinematographer here. Here's the description for Love Lies Bleeding. Reclusive gym manager Lou, Kristen Stewart, falls hard for bodybuilder Jackie, Katie O'Brien, but their love ignites violence, pulling them deep into the web of Lou's criminal family. So a very noirish sounding queer thriller from Rose Glass. Ed Harris, Jenna Malone, and Dave Franco also star. What's your pick?
Folie à deux, Love Lies Bleeding.
This here's Jackie.
Hi.
She needs a job. Says she'll do anything.
Yeah, you like guns?
Not really.
Don't hear that.
Having appreciated, obviously, we nominated it for the Golden Brick, St. Maud, but not have been over the moon about it. It was one of those, the talent was tantalizing when you think of Rose Glass as a director. That's why it got the Golden Brick nod, right? And so this is a case of getting to see that follow-up that you've been waiting for. And Kristen Stewart also as a dominant voice in this is intriguing. I mean, the Drive Away Dolls cast, you cannot quibble with at all. That is excellent. Ethan Coen on his own with this sort of material, an unknown quantity in a different way, okay, obviously I'm going to be there, but not quite sure how this could go. Whereas Love Lies Bleeding seems like a more promising unknown quantity, if that's fair.
Yeah, no, I like your moxie, and it's hard to quibble with. A couple friends of the show, Chicago-based critics, had really positive things to say about your choice, Love Lies Bleeding. Robert Daniels gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd, said, among contemporary actors, there's Kristen Stewart and then everybody else, which seems accurate. Brian Tallarico, also 4 stars. What St. Maud was to religion, this mesmerizing follow-up is to, well, Love Lies and Bleeding. Takes some wild cinematic punches and lands nearly all of them. So those blurbs certainly helped to increase my excitement.
Sounds good.
Love Lies Bleeding, which was already pretty high, just based off of Rose Glass and St. Maud. But here's my counter blurb. Ethan Coen. I'm sorry, I'm going boring here. I've got two words, Ethan Coen. I think that Dolls cast that I mentioned just helps put it over the top for me as well, with Domingo, Pascal, Damon, Feldstein, Qualley. Here's Patrick in Louisville, wrote in with a poll comment question. He said, I'm not sure if it will be my favorite of the year or even in the top 10, but after seeing the trailer a few times for Drive Away Dolls, it's the movie that I want to see and need to see the most. I love Joel's version of Macbeth, very good, but Ethan is going in a different direction. It looks like a romp in the style of the best Coen movies, in which the brothers turn the acting and action up to 11. Winter is long and busy, so on February 23rd, I'll be ready for a drive to Florida with the ladies, and I'll enjoy whatever mayhem they encounter.
All right. That's strong logic there, Patrick. Our next pairing. I don't know. Was this you or Sam who came up with this? I like this one.
Well, Sam came up with the second part of it. The first part of it's my link.
Oh, nice. Perfect. Macho 80s reheats, a.k.a. actors we love, doing dumb shit we also love.
That's it. Sam, of course, came up with the funnier one.
All right. We've got Ryan Gosling in The Fall Guy coming out May 3 versus Jake Gyllenhaal in Roadhouse. I still don't believe this is real. March 21. So your directors. Fall Guy has David Leitch, who made Bullet Train, Deadpool 2, and Atomic Blonde. Doug Liman is behind Roadhouse. Liman, yeah, of course, The Bourne Identity, Edge of Tomorrow, Swingers, and Go. Fall Guy stars Ryan Gosling as Colt Seavers, a stuntman who has to track down a missing movie star, solve a conspiracy, and try to win back the love of his life while still doing his day job. Emily Blunt, Winston Duke, and Aaron Taylor Johnson, also in Fall Guy. As for Roadhouse, I think this, you'll have to tell me, Adam, this is an update. This is now a former UFC fighter, takes a job as a bouncer at a rough and tumble roadhouse in the Florida Keys. Gyllenhaal co-stars with Billy Magnuson.
Before we start, do you have insurance?
What?
Your coverage good? Like, you have dental?
Oh, haha.
Is there a hospital nearby? Is it, like, too far?
It's about, like, 25 minutes, I'd say.
I just slapped you. Are you all right?
What?
So you like to fight. You ever win?
No one ever wins a fight.
Has this one been keeping you up at night, Adam? I know it has.
No. Some words of wisdom for you, Josh. Pain don't hurt. But this matchup does, because someone decided there's even a question here. There is not a question.
Oh, yes, no.
Yes, Gosling and Leech have me intrigued as I can be about a Fall Guy adaptation. It wasn't a show I cared much about.
So this is an adaptation of the show.
Oh, yeah. The Fall Guy was a TV show. Lee Majors. I remember
the show. I didn't know if they were just riffing on the title.
Yeah. No, it's an adaptation of that story, as far as I know, right? It's definitely a property that they're trying to tap into. Whether or not it's got much cachet, they're going to try to give it some. And I do love both of these actors. They're two of my favorites to watch, Gosling and Gyllenhaal. But Lyman's one of those guys who's a sneaky good director. All of those films, The Bourne Identity, love. Edge of Tomorrow, very good. Swingers, love. Go, very good.
Yep.
I like American Made. As well, the Tom Cruise movie, we reviewed it a few years ago. It's pretty good. It's not up there with those other four, but it's pretty good. Very watchable. He'll make Roadhouse clever, or at least interesting. Not smart and interesting, but semi-interesting, and that's going to have to be enough for me, Josh. It's Roadhouse. There's a part of me that, of course, wants to say it's sacrilege in destroying my childhood, but I think it's in good hands with Lyman and Gyllenhaal.
What's the star rating translation on semi-interesting?
Semi-interesting is 3.25.
Okay. I will hope you give it that when it comes out. I know very little about the Patrick Swayze verse. This is a Swayze thing, right? Roadhouse? This is where our childhoods, young adulthoods.
Very different.
Very different. So, okay. What was he? He wasn't a UFC fighter. What was he in the first one?
No, he, you know what he was? He was a bouncer who moved to another club and became a bouncer. That's what he was.
The movie is joking about him.
No, I'm not. The movie was about him taking another job as a bouncer.
That sounds not very interesting. So
it's
clearly
brilliant.
Folie à Deux, Fall Guy.
Okay, moving on. Number five, Children of Ridley. That means we have Alien Romulus. I think it's graduated from Untitled Ridley Scott Project, or Untitled Alien Project, I should say, to Alien Romulus, August 16. Versus, here's another one that's currently still untitled. Untitled Gladiator sequel, or you can call it Gladiator 2. That is scheduled for a Thanksgiving release, November 22nd. The directors, Fede Alvarez, directing Romulus. He made 2013's Evil Dead, which I didn't see, but he also made Don't Breathe, which I thought was very good. And Daddy's back. Ridley Scott's back for the Gladiator sequel. Here's the Alien Romulus description. A group of young people on a distant world find themselves in a confrontation with the most terrifying life form in the universe. That should sound pretty familiar. Apparently, it's set between the events of Scott's 79 Alien and Cameron's 86 Aliens. Priscilla herself, Kaylee Spaney, stars in Alien Romulus. And then, with the Gladiator sequel, it's the continuing story of Lucius, the son of Lucilla, Connie Nielsen in the 2000 film, with Paul Mescal as Lucius. How about this? Denzel Washington, who last teamed with Ridley Scott in 2007's American Gangster. And we've got another film in 2024 starring Pedro Pascal. Josh, Folie à Deux.
What? You know how you see a cast for the first time, and I did hear that Paul Mescal was going to be in this. Sometimes you hear a cast and each name, your eyebrows raise a little higher, like, we've already done this, right? As you were reading these names for this Gladiator thing, my brow just increasingly furrowed. Not because of these actors, mind you, but, you know, Paul Mescal, after All of Us Strangers, is this what I want to see Paul Mescal in? No. Denzel Washington, okay. Obviously he's in a different phase of his career. This is one where it's almost like, oh, we're going to get some King Kong stuff, which maybe people will love. It'll be full on Training Day, but I don't know if that's what I, and then Pedro Pascal. No, you don't need to do this, Pedro. This is not encouraging to me as much talent as there is. And then if I look over at Alien Romulus, I don't know how much Romulus does for me now that it's named that, but I'm still a sucker for this world. Alvarez, I did appreciate those two horror films he made, Evil Dead, the remake, and then Don't Breathe. So, folie à deux, Alien Romulus.
I am only encouraged by all those performers being in Gladiator 2.
You don't want to see them do this?
I do. I want to see anything Paul Mescal and Denzel Washington do. I'm happy that they're in a film together, whatever it is. I mean, Alien versus Gladiator, if we're just taking the Ridley Scott films, obviously I rate Alien higher, but it's diminishing returns for me. I know I'm an outlier on this one since Prometheus. And as much as I liked Don't Breathe and do think Alvarez is a talented director, and Scott can obviously be hit or miss, as I thought he was mostly miss with Napoleon, I'm still going to go with the property that Ridley has attached himself to. Yeah, it's Gladiator 2.
All right.
Okay.
Our next pairing. Oh, this is going to hurt you. This is going to hurt you so bad. The Boys are back. You have to choose between Richard Linklater's Hitman, coming out June 7, or Steven Soderbergh's Presence, which does not have a release date. I found out about these, I think, just yesterday, as Sam was posting about them on Slack. Here are the plots for Hitman. A cop working undercover as the most in-demand hitman in Houston breaks protocol to help a desperate woman escape her abusive boyfriend. Glenn Powell starring here. He also co-wrote the script with Linklater and co-starring with Adria Oriona. Presence. A family moves into a suburban house and becomes convinced they're not alone. That's all you get. But you also learn that Lucy Liu and Julia Fox are starring in this. So Hitman premiered at the 2023 Venice Film Festival. Somehow I totally missed that. Also played New York Film Fest and Toronto's. Over at Venice, Bilga Ibiri called it the ultimate philosophizing Hitman movie and a masterpiece. The aforementioned Brian Tallarico, who saw it at TIFF, wrote that it, quote, reminded me of Out of Sight, which is an all-time fave.
And of course, it's a little bit ironic since that's a Soderbergh film.
Right.
Yes.
Presence just premiered last weekend at Sundance. Okay, I have a note here. There were reports of walkouts due to people being so freaked out.
I saw this on Twitter. I saw it on Twitter.
That happens sometimes at Sundance. The film is told from the point of view of a spirit, with Soderbergh himself handling camera duties. Here's Bilga Ibiri again. Quote, Presence is the best thing Soderbergh's done in ages. So Adam, not only two of your, fair to say, favorite filmmakers, but two with projects that are getting advanced praise, I think sound fascinating.
Yes.
Where are you going to go?
Well, first, people do walk out because they're freaked out at Sundance. It's because of the latest coming of age movie. It's not always because of a scary movie.
We've seen this and it's terrifying.
Yeah. Rimshot had to go for the easy joke there. Yeah, this is hard. And it's not as hard as having to choose between Linklater's filmography and Soderbergh's filmography, which we've already had to do on this show in some insane Sam Van Hollegren deathmatch poll question. And as I recall, as much as I love Soderbergh and his work, I think he's a genius filmmaker. I'm pretty sure I gave the nod to Linklater there just based on my adoration, just pure adoration for 4 to 6 of his films. But Josh, I can't do it here. And maybe I'm under the influence of reading things like I saw for myself, as I noted, there being reports of walkouts due to people being so freaked out by a horror movie. That does make me insanely curious. If any technician could pull it off, though, I think it's Soderbergh. But I also did just see the ultimate philosophizing hitman.
That's
movie.
What I was wondering.
I thought the killer was pretty good. And while I get that nobody can philosophize quite like Linklater, it's still an assassin movie. It's still a hitman movie. I'm a little worn out on the subject. Scare me, Steve. Scare me.
Yeah, it's solid reasoning. It's hard not to think that way. I had forgotten we did that filmography choice death match with the two of them, but I was thinking along those lines is, you know, these are two filmmakers I greatly admire. I'm not at the adoration level you are, but mm-hmm. I admire them somewhat equally. And so I was going through my mind, well, who, if I just had to choose one based on what they've given us, because I don't know what these are going to be. And I feel like I'm with you in that Linklater I might value slightly a little bit more. It's close. But then again, because it's so close, I have to look at what is at least being proposed here. I'm a horror guy. I don't have a nagging need for another Hitman movie of any kind. So, folie à deux, presence.
More to come. Find all of our 2024 matchup polls at filmspotting.net. You can make your picks.
Here are a couple of ways you can help the show. If you're a regular listener, or even if you're still getting to know us, would you mind taking a minute and giving us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify? Every new rating or review does help us reach new listeners.
Another way to support us, join the Film Spotting family. Get access to bonus shows every month, like our Oscar nominations reaction pod. We would like to say welcome to new family member Luke Higginson. He's in Toronto. He's been listening since about the time you joined the show, Josh, 2012. He went looking for a conversation about PTA's The Master. He enjoyed our review of Asteroid City, likes it anytime we go deep on something we're passionate about. A review we got wrong? How about this? Linklater. He says Boyhood, which I loved more than you, Josh, but he says he wasn't a fan of it at all. And that hurts me, Luke.
Wow.
His current Letterboxd four favorites, good list here. Fargo, Rashomon, The Empire Strikes Back, and 24-Hour Party People. Michael Winterbottom getting some love in the Letterboxd four. That last one, a favorite he revisited recently and even guested on a podcast to talk about it. Rashomon is a film Josh, he credits for turning him into a cinephile. I think he's one of maybe, I don't know, tens of thousands.
Yeah,
that was probably the case, right?
Very much a familiar story and a totally understandable one. Yeah, I'm curious going back to Luke's. I'd love to hear more from Luke, who maybe I will. I just followed him today on Letterboxd about his Boyhood quibbles. You're right, Adam. I remember you were aghast that I didn't have it on my top 10 that year.
In your top 10.
Even though I loved it, I thought it was great, but there was maybe one or two points of reservation I had. Maybe Luke and I share those. If you want to follow Luke on Letterboxd like I just did, you can search for his name, Luke, Higginson. So thanks so much, Luke. Welcome to the family.
Yeah, turns out I'm the cool host. I already followed.
Look at you.
Luke on Letterboxd. Just checked it out. Already followed him. Like Luke, you can become a Film Spotting family member. You get to help keep us doing what we're doing, and you get perks. Listen early and ad-free. You get the newsletter. You get those monthly bonus shows. You can get access to the complete Film Spotting archive as well. FilmSpottingFamily.com.
Gonna meet my ex for the first time since the breakup.
And you're still calling it the breakup?
I thought we were fine. We were better than fine. We moved in together. We had Hamilton tickets.
This is serious commitment.
Right.
One more bit of 2023 business before we return to our preview of the new movie year. It is the Golden Brick Award, Josh. We're finally ready to announce the winner. You just heard Vivian Opara and David Johnson in Rain Alan Miller's Rye Lane, one of our 2023 Brick finalists.
The Golden Brick Award goes to our favorite film from a new or emerging director. Why in the world do we call it a Golden Brick? Well, because the show's favorite film from a new or emerging director way back in 2005 was Brick, which came from first-time feature director, some guy named Ryan Johnson.
Yeah, one of those movies that we championed and a lot of people saw because of us, and that really was the driving spirit behind The Golden Brick, which we started awarding officially in 2009. And in 2023, we had five finalists for the award. We invited members of the extended Film Spotting podcast family to weigh in. So Michael gets a vote, Mariah Gates, all four Next Picture Show hosts, former Film Spotting SVU hosts Matt Singer and Allison Wilmore as well. And we invited you, the listeners, to vote for your favorite BRIC finalists. We also, Josh, gave our Film Spotting Advisory Board members, the very top tier of the Film Spotting family, a vote. And after we crunched the numbers, we did get a winner. Actually, in this case, we got two winners because we have our official choice. And then if there's a discrepancy between the one our listeners chose in the poll and the one that our committee ultimately landed on, we do have an audience choice winner as well.
Let's take a look at those five 2023 finalists. Rye Lane, which you just heard a bit from, Raven Jackson's All Dirt Roads Taste of Salt, Kauthar Ben-Hania's Four Daughters, Kyle Edward Ball's Skinamarink, and lastly, Theater Camp from directors Molly Gordon and Nick Lieberman.
So in the listener poll, we have a winner. We have our audience choice winner for 2023. It was really close, but Rye Lane did come out on top. How about that? Even as, you know, that was a movie that came out earlier in the year, accessible because a lot of people have access to Hulu. It might be on some other platforms as well. Other films like Four Daughters didn't come out until the end. All Dirt Roads came out at the end. We gave people a little extended time here to see these movies before announcing a winner, and it withstood all comers. Rye Lane, with 33% of the vote, takes the Audience Choice Award. Theater Camp, my beloved Theater Camp, very close behind, Josh, 31%.
Kind of a surprise to me, honestly. I mean, Rye Lane, deserving. Congratulations. The two words that came to mind, I think I said to you shortly after I watched it, sweet and scrappy. Really appreciated that film. But Theater Camp, the amount of conversation I saw around Theater Camp among Film Spotting listeners, I thought that was a shoe-in. So maybe something of an upset, but both good films. Congrats to Rye Lane for taking that audience choice poll.
I'm going to let you do the honors here, Josh. After all the votes were tallied, we have a winner of the 2023 Golden Brick that is not Rye Lane. It's also not Theater Camp. That means it's either All Dirt Roads, Taste of Salt, Four Daughters, or Skinamarink, one of your top 10 films of the year. I think you had the Kyle Edward Ball film at number 7. The winner is...
our winner for this year's Golden Brick, Raven Jackson's All Dirt Roads, Taste of Salt. Yeah, I had this at number 5. Mariah loved it even more. It was her number 1 film of the year. Obviously, I totally get it. This memory piece told not in chronological order, very immersive, very tactile, a vision that is drawn from perhaps other inspirations. Terrence Malick has been name-checked, but also Jackson, a poet before she became a filmmaker, and you can sense that it has this sense of poetry to it as well. So a thrilling talent. As always with our Golden Brick winner, cannot wait to see where Jackson goes next. And she now joins a list of previous winners, including, get this, Yorgos Lanthimos.
Things turned out okay.
Sean Baker, Anna Rose Holmer, Koganada. We could go on with others,
yeah,
but all very exciting filmmakers. And yeah, can't wait to see where Raven Jackson goes. If you haven't seen All Dirt Roads Taste of Salt yet, it's available to rent at this point on most platforms.
Yeah, I'm happy for it. It is a very deserving choice. I do want to call out that this was, as far as I can recall, the closest Film Spotting Golden Brick vote ever.
Oh, really? Wow, I didn't know this.
Yeah. Good news, I suppose, for Four Daughters this week. An Oscar nomination and, for whatever it's worth, a runner-up in Film Spotting Golden Brick for 2023.
That's
Josh,
awesome.
I'm telling you, the way we do this is we let each committee member rank the films. So 1 to 5. So the highest score is actually the lowest score, the closest to 1. The closer to 1 you are, that means the higher the votes that you got, your average score. And the separation between All Dirt Roads, Taste of Salt, and Four Daughters was something like 0.24.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very cool because, you know, both very under the radar films, I would say, which there are degrees to that. Some years we have a winner that got, you know, not a huge release, but a notable release, showed up on a lot of top 10 lists. And that's not really the case with either of these. So very cool to see that they were the top 2. And then, yeah, so remind me, the Film Spotting Advisory Board, those members of the Film Spotting family at that top tier, their vote, did that have like an equal wait for the final winner as your vote, my vote, Sam's vote. Very cool. I like how that worked out too. So, you've got some say if you want to join that top tier, that film spotting advisory board tier, and help us determine the next year's Golden Brick, because we're at it. We're already scouring. We're waiting to hear what's coming out of Sundance that gets a distribution deal, that looks like it's a newer emerging filmmaker with an exciting project. We're starting to work already on the 2024 Golden Brick.
Both of those movies too, bold, artistic films about sisters and about family.
That's true. Yeah, that's
actually
a good point.
Kind of something in common, both very much worth seeing if you haven't had a chance to see those Golden Brick finalists or the others. As Josh said, Alder Rose Taste of Salt is available to rent on most platforms, and you can get more info about the Golden Brick, including this year's winner and all past winners, at filmspotting.net/bricks.
Hello, I'm Howard Mirziak, founder and president of Lacuna Incorporated. Why remember a destructive love affair? Here at Lacuna, we have perfected a safe, effective technique for the focused erasure of troubling memories. In a matter of hours...
That was the late, great Tom Wilkinson in the trailer for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. That film, believe it or not, turns 20 this year. And I'm glad we're mentioning it here because we missed our chance to pay respects to Wilkinson here in December. It was just at the end of the month that he passed away. 75, twice Oscar nominated in the bedroom, lead Michael Clayton supporting. So good in both of those performances. And Josh, the sad news just keeps coming. I think just today as we're recording, or maybe yesterday, 97 years old, the director Norman Jewison passed, a 7-time Oscar nominee.
Yeah, 3 of those nominations were for Best Director: Moonstruck, Fiddler on the Roof, and In the Heat of the Night. And those 3 were also nominated for Best Picture, along with A Soldier Story and The Russians Are Coming. The Russians Are Coming. Here are some of his other films: Jesus Christ Superstar, The Hurricane, The Thomas Crown Affair, Rollerball, 75, and then he had Al Pacino starring, and Justice for All.
Yeah, Fiddler on the Roof remains a real embarrassment for me that I've never seen.
Me either.
But Moonstruck is a brilliant film. And you know what else is brilliant? In the Heat of the Night. Those are 2 great films. And then you throw in something I love that I have a ton of affection for, like Jesus Christ Superstar. You've got some fun genre movies like Thomas Crown and Rollerball, Jewison. One of those... perhaps underrated directors, but someone who definitely left his mark. And like we said, just really sad with both him and Tom Wilkinson passing away in the last couple of weeks, Josh.
Yeah, I'm really bad when it comes to Jewison's filmography, and really random. Obviously, I've seen Moonstruck, but have never seen In the Heat of the Night. And one that I did, The Hurricane, for some reason, and then Rollerball. So I'm all over the place, have a lot of intriguing titles to catch up with from Jewison's vast career.
We will get to more 2024 movie matchups in a bit. First, we did want to highlight some of our show plans for the new year, and that's where Eternal Sunshine comes in. It is one of the titles we've currently got penciled in for a Sacred Cow anniversary review. That's also when we'll decide whether or not it's deserving of a spot in the film spotting pantheon, even though, yes, it's already there.
Oh, man. Are we going to have to revisit something we never figured out?
Yeah.
Is can we remove films from the pantheon? Uh-huh. How do you get new ones in?
That's it.
Oh, I feel
all we know,
the headache is coming.
All we know and all we're going to say. Now, Film Spotting Advisory Board members will remember this call from August, I think, where we talked about this and we reimagined what the Film Spotting pantheon can be. All we can say for sure, all you really need to process, is that we are trying to make a point to see, obviously we've seen them, to discuss on the show every title that has been put into the Film Spotting pantheon.
Yes.
And we've made a good dent over the years, but it kind of feels like without us giving it the Film Spotting Sacred Cow treatment, maybe they shouldn't officially be in the pantheon. And that means we're going to give Eternal Sunshine another look. We'll decide whether or not it should stay. And we're looking at that for March 2024 because it came out back in March 2004. But here are some other anniversary Sacred Cow titles we're looking at, Josh, that are virtual locks for us to talk about. Maybe not 100% or all 100% of them, but close. Polanski's Chinatown turns 50 in June. We know for sure that we're going to do a double feature of two Linklater movies, Before Sunrise and Before Sunset. That's in July. It's, of course, Before Sunset, the sequel, that turns 20 this year. That was a 2004 release. Do the Right Thing. Never talked about. Made top fives. Never discussed on the show, Josh. Turns 35.
That's insane.
This July. Apocalypse Now. Been in the Pantheon since the very beginning. One of the first titles Sam and I threw into the Pantheon. Couldn't wait to put Apocalypse Now in there. I think it preceded the show formally beginning. Turns 45 in August. And another one in August. Another film that's been in the Pantheon going way, way back. The Wizard of Oz turns 85.
Man, that's, I mean, we're getting to the point, movies we're going to start revisiting. I mean, you could do this anytime, that are almost 100 years old, but ones that feel, I guess, because I saw it as a kid, like they feel part of me, even though it's an older film. The Wizard of Oz being 85, that seems ridiculous. If you had to pick, you know, part of this, as you were saying, part of this project is, should one of these maybe not be in there? Do you think realistically any of those titles we revisit
not
have a
titles.
Shot of being? No, I don't think
No, because I've already seen all of those films multiple times.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not changing my mind on them. Now, hopefully for listeners' sake and for ours, we can justify the experience and the rewatch by having things to say about them that maybe we've never expressed before. And
Absolutely.
That wouldn't be that tough for me. I haven't written about any of these films. And of course, as we said, haven't discussed them in detail. They've all probably come up in various ways or I was going to say made various top fives, but they really haven't because most of them have been
right.
in the Pantheon since the very beginning of the show. So it's an opportunity. I'm looking forward to that opportunity. It's not really an opportunity to eject them from the Pantheon because that's not going to happen.
Not in these cases, at least. No way.
No, it's not. Also on the schedule this year, two film spotting marathons. If our own website is accurate, and I hope it is, I put the information there, we will be doing our 49th and 50th, Josh, film spotting marathons. We've been doing these since the very earliest days of the show, back in 2005, acknowledging that we have our blind spots, acknowledging that we need to fill in the holes in our cinematic educations. And we made our pitches for the marathons back in the fall to the Film Spotting Advisory Board on an FAB call, one of our quarterly calls. It's one of the benefits you get as part of being a Film Spotting Advisory Board member. You get to help determine show content and the direction of film spotting. Two came out on top. And again, these were very close as well. But one we've been talking about for a long time and had in the running for a long time, and listeners finally said, okay, it's time. You have to do the films of director William Wyler.
Can't
Which
wait.
Will be great.
Yep.
Yeah.
March.
That's the first one up.
A director we're somewhat familiar with a little bit, but not nearly as much as we should be. I mean, this is one of the most decorated filmmakers ever. 3-time Best Director winner, 12-time nominee, maybe not considered quite, you know, an auteur in the same way as some of his peers, perhaps because he works a little bit like Norman Jewison in different genres. Here are some of the titles we're thinking about getting to. Ben-Hur, The Best Years of Our Lives, Funny Girl, The Heiress, some that are in mix as well, Mrs. Miniver, Wuthering Heights, Roman Holiday, Dodsworth. So, yeah, that gives you a sense of the vastness of William Wyler's career.
Yeah, and we both have seen one or two, or maybe even three William Wyler movies, but you listed those titles. Roman Holiday, probably not going to be in there. I've seen it. I can't recall. Have you seen Roman Holiday?
Yep.
Okay, so we've both seen it. That's not in the mix. Of those other titles, I know you have seen The Best Years of Our Lives, and I thank you for indulging me by including it in this marathon, because that for me, I think I've said this before, but that for me may be currently my single biggest film blind spot. Mm-hmm. And as much as I want to see all of those titles, the fact that I'm finally going to be able to cross off The Best Years of Our Lives is really, for me, what's driving my excitement.
Yeah, happy to revisit it. I can, not that this speaks to a film's quality, but for some reason I can distinctly remember, it was within the last 5, maybe 10 years that I saw it, watching The Best Years of Our Lives, because it was a case of a work trip, you know, at a hotel, got back early, not ready to go to sleep, and just figured I'm going to watch this on my laptop.
Really?
Not ideal viewing conditions, right? And just being utterly floored by it. I think you will as well. So can't wait to watch it again.
Our other marathon coming later, I think we usually start these in the summer or right before the summer, trying to get it done. The second one, that is, we try to get it done before fall and all of those prestige releases. I was looking back on the fact, I was thinking about anniversaries, titles we could look at. And 1974 is one of those movie years, Josh, 50 years ago, that is widely considered certainly one of the best picture classes of all time. I mean, it's the year of The Conversation and The Godfather 2, among other great films. And you look back at that entire year, and it's incredible what films rounded out that time. We've seen, between us, all of those, or most of those big titles that you would look back on and think, okay, those were the films of 74. But that doesn't mean there aren't a bunch that we haven't seen. So this is really a 50th anniversary look back, 1974 Blind Spots. That's going to be the next marathon here on Film Spotting after William Wyler.
So we haven't nailed down this schedule exactly, but we're thinking about titles like Jacques Rivette's Celine and Julie Go Boating, Brian De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise, Sam Peckinpah's Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, or maybe Robert Altman's California Split. As you can see already, major filmmakers mm-hmm. that would possibly be part of this marathon.
Yeah, I think the two big titles that are locks, and again, huge blind spots for me, the Rivette, Celine and Julie Go Boating, and the Peckinpah, Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. But what you can probably gather there is what we found is, and we've got 6 to 10 options at least, there's a bunch of big auteurs who all had films, some of them multiple films, in 1974. Altman made two films that year. We had a film in 74 from Robert Bresson. There are a bunch of those filmmakers who have titles that we've overlooked over the years, and it's high time that we finally check them out. So the 1974 Blind Spots is our second marathon. More info about the Film Spotting Marathons past and future is at filmspotting.net/marathons. Finally, but actually fast approaching, Josh, good thing you've already started your homework. Film Spotting Madness is only about a month away. It's our 9th annual movie elimination tournament. 64 films go in, only one emerges. We've been counting down all of the decades from, 2010, I think we started with. We've certainly done the 1990s, the 80s, 70s, 60s, and here we are, the best of the 1950s. And we went back and forth on whether or not we wanted to continue this or go with another topic. Did we want to keep the decade thing going? And ultimately where we landed, and we got input from the FAB on this as well, is that the 50s are simply too good of a decade to skip. We may not go to the 40s, and I know how good the 40s are too, but we knew we had to get in the 50s.
Yeah, and I'm glad we did. Already starting to work on some films I'd never seen before and getting to those, but just thinking about the titles that will be on that bracket when it's finalized. It's going to be excruciating as ever, but we're talking about some of the, not just best of the decade, but some of the best films of all time. We're talking about like some sight and sound titles that yes. are going to be in this bracket. So it's going to be tough. And yeah, already doing a little of that homework has been incredibly rewarding.
Film Spotting Madness starts up at the end of February with some play-in polls, the Madness shortlist with some very helpful tiers. First year we did this, I tiered them to help you prioritize your Madness watching. That's all on Letterboxd. So everything you need, you can get to Letterboxd, find the links you want at filmspotting.net/Madness. That's the Film Spotting Madness homepage. Speaking of Madness, Sam has made me crazy with this new poll. Not because it's flawed, it's just too damn hard. Or it could be flawed as well, Josh, but I'll leave that up to listeners to determine. He's asking us to choose one and only one Alfred Hitchcock-directed film from the 1950s. Should be pretty easy. I know it's relatively easy for you, because I know how you feel about one of these films in particular. But of course, it's not that easy, because Hitch directed 11 movies in the 1950s, and four of them are basically, inarguably, masterpieces. These are those options.
1951's Strangers on a Train, 1954's Rear Window, 1958's Vertigo, 1959's North by Northwest. Yeah, just take that in, that in that time frame, we got those four films from Hitchcock. Your other option could be titles like Cary Grant and Grace Kelly in To Catch a Thief, Kelly again in Dial M for Murder, Henry Fonda in The Wrong Man, Jimmy Stewart in The Man Who Knew Too Much, plus Stage Fright, I Confess, and The Trouble with Harry. So
yeah, all I can do here, Josh, is rule out North by Northwest, which I think is very good. I just don't put on the same pedestal as the other three.
I'm with you.
But that's all I got.
Yeah. And you were alluding to, you know, I only have this answer because when you do this job, you're asked all the time, what's your favorite movie? And honestly, it's like a safe thing to say, Rear Window. Now, have I sat down on the same day and watched Rear Window and Vertigo, which, you know, is generally rises higher on like the Sight and Sound poll, those sorts of things? No, I haven't done that. I haven't forced myself to do that. I have my reasons where I default to Rear Window, but it is helpful in cases like this because I don't have to torture myself. I can just say, yeah, Rear Window. It's Rear Window.
Yeah, they're both masterpieces. So there is not an incorrect answer. I think I'm still a Vertigo guy at this point. I think about its legacy and its impact, and I understand why it's a film that has continued to only rise in estimation on that Sight and Sound list. So it seems a little safer, unfortunately, which means boring, but Vertigo is my pick. That said, it's actually your choice, Rear Window, that's not exactly running away with it, but it's got a healthy margin right now over Vertigo, 45%, at least based on the Twitter poll, 45% to 31%. And then here, the upset for me is that North by Northwest is beating Strangers on a Train by 10 percentage points. I really do prefer Strangers on a Train. So
yeah, I'm with you there, but I think, you know, with Cary Grant in North by Northwest, and it is, there are sequences there that are taught, you know, if you in film studies classes, I think that's what lends itself to maybe being more beloved. But if you're just looking at the two films, Strangers on a Train, I agree, the far stronger Hitchcock.
Everyone can vote in that poll and leave a comment at filmspotting.net.
Quick note about our sister podcast, The Next Picture Show. They have a new pairing, which, this happens from time to time, includes a film I was completely unaware of. The contemporary movie they're looking at is Self-Reliance, which is available on Hulu, written and directed by actor Jake Johnson. A man is offered $1 million to play a game in which hunters try to kill him. That's the plot there. So they're pairing this with Elio Petri's The Tenth Victim, from 1965. Here's the plot description for this one. In the near future, wars are avoided by giving individuals the chance to kill in the big hunt, the most popular form of entertainment in the world. So yeah, I don't know, Adam, were you like me, The Tenth Victim, familiar with it?
Yeah, I think this is maybe the second time in the history of The Next Picture Show they have a title that I have never even heard of. I'm fascinated.
Should be a good discussion. The Next Picture Show is available every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts.
19 states have seceded.
The United States Army ramps up activity.
The White House issued warnings to the Western forces as well as the Florida Alliance.
The three-term president assures the uprising will be dealt with swiftly.
Let me know if you want to try anything.
We get back into our 2024 Folie à Deux preview with some of the trailer for Alex Garland's Civil War, which comes to theaters on April 12th. We have paired this with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. That comes out May 10th. So this is our In a World pairing.
You can give it, Josh, a little, you can give it a little more oomph. Dolby.
In a World.
There you go. That's the Dolby version.
Thank you. I'm available, Hollywood, if you need me. The director of Civil War is Alex Garland. Previous films, Ex Machina, Annihilation, Men, Wes Ball of The Maze Runner and its two sequels fame is the director of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. In Civil War, we've got a group of journalists, a group of war journalists, who attempt to survive while reporting the truth as the U.S. stands on the brink of civil war. Another Kaylee Spaney film, Josh, with Kirsten Dunst, Jesse Plemons, Stephen McKinley Henderson, and Nick Offerman. In Kingdom, it's set several generations in the future following Caesar's reign, and here a new tyrannical ape leader builds his empire. I feel like this is an obvious one, but I never know with you. What's your pick?
Yeah, I'm probably going the obvious direction. I mean, as I said earlier, some of these details I'm learning as you're reading them, and you got to Apes director Wes Ball, The Maze Runner and its two sequels, and I kind of like did a grimace, and that's probably totally unfair because I don't know Wes Ball and have not seen The Maze Runner or its two sequels. I don't know a lot of people who have. They must have been huge hits. There were two sequels, but it's not going to call me towards the kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I loved all three of those previous Apes films, so that is intriguing to me. We both did, I recall. And yet, an original film from Alex Garland, Folie à Deux, Civil War.
Yeah, I was mixed to negative on Men, but to paraphrase Jules Winfield, it was a bold statement. And you're almost right on the three Apes movies. I'm at that stage, sadly, where I can't quite keep them all straight. And it's because not for any reason based on the films or their quality, I stopped engaging with those films. I don't know why, but after Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, favorable, War for the Planet of the Apes is one I just didn't see. Josh, we didn't talk about it on the show. I don't think we reviewed it, and I never ended up making time for it that year. So I feel, I guess, just a little out, even if it wasn't totally intentional on my part. I feel a little out on the Apes series of films, and that's in my mind, but really what's on my mind is that Civil War seems like it's going to be a provocative film, as Alex Garland films always are. That said, the mere thought of the potential discourse around it has me preemptively exhausted, but I'm in on any new Garland picture.
Might just have to log off the week preceding. Yeah. Maybe that's the way to handle that. Yeah. Yep. But we're aligned there on Civil War. Okay. Here it comes, Adam. Jokers. Jokers.
Yep.
Joker, Folie à Deux, October 4, or The People's Joker. This one's not too far away. April 5, probably in limited release. Todd Phillips, of course, making the sequel to his Joker. And then Vera Drew is behind The People's Joker. Here's a little background information on The People's Joker. It comes from Laura Riordan, who responded to our poll asking, what's your most anticipated film of 2024? Here's Laura. I had to go with Other, despite a strong love for Eggers, Bong, and Miller, due to a little film called The People's Joker, an unauthorized parody of the Gotham supervillain. This film has been caught up in a legal gray area for a while now, since a few slightly convoluted festival releases. But thankfully, it seems to be getting a 2024 release. Writer-director Vera Drew reimagines the most famous of DC villains as an underdog trans woman, and with a supporting cast of various alt-comedy superstars like Scott Aukerman and Maria Bamford as Lorne Michaels, it's easily my most anticipated of the year. I hope you guys share a spotlight on this film, as I think it deserves some wider awareness.
Yeah.
You're in? You're all in?
Preach, Laura. Preach. How fast can I run toward The People's Joker and leave Todd Phillips in the dust? It's a film, she mentioned Fess. It played at the Chicago International Film Festival this past October. I know it got a good response there. And if there's anyone who needs to be knocked down a smug peg, it's the Joker. I'm all in for an unauthorized parody, Josh. I know I'm going with it.
Yeah. And then that's the way this will go. This is so set up beautifully. And I hope it works for Vera Drew and The People's Joker, not having seen a frame of it. Of course, I would rather this little movie benefits from the utter disdain that critics have for Todd Phillips and Joker. I hope that happens for her and for the film. But you know what? I like Joker. Look it up, people. It's true. I am not backing off from that. I think it's a really good film, an interesting film, well-made, well-performed. Did I need a sequel? No, I didn't need a sequel. Unless possibly it's a musical with Lady Gaga. Maybe. So yeah, all the best for The People's Joker, but I'm not going to turn my back. I'm not going to flip, Adam. I'm going to stand.
Of course not.
Strong. Folie à Deux. Folie à Deux.
Number 9 here in our 10 film deathmatch preview. This one, all the work of Sam Van Halgren, including the name. Sequels prequels, reheatquels, we'd skip, except, wait, who's directing that? So the first death match with three doors. Let's make a deal. You got three doors to choose. A Quiet Place, Day One, comes out June 28th. You know who's directing that? The guy who made Pig, one of my favorite films of a few years ago, Michael Sarnowski.
Intriguing.
Twisters. I don't know. Is it a sequel to Twister? Is it something else? You tell me, Josh. July 19th is when that comes out. But the filmmaker is Lee Isaac Chung, who made Minari, a film I did not love as much as everybody else in the world, but I am intrigued by whatever Lee Isaac Chung is going to do next.
Puzzling.
And finally, Mufasa, The Lion King. Doesn't come out until Christmas time, December 20th. Barry Jenkins making Mufasa, The Lion King. The plot descriptions really give you everything you need.
That one's distressing.
We'll see, I guess, where you go. A prequel detailing the origin of the creatures in A Quiet Place. That's A Quiet Place Day One, okay? Alex Wolff, Jimon Hounsou, and Lupita Nyong'o star in that. Twisters is a sequel to the 1996 film about storm-chasing scientists studying tornadoes because we need more Glenn Powell in our lives. Anthony Ramos and Daisy Edgar Jones co-star. And a prequel to 2019's Lion King is, in fact, what Mufasa is, with the voices of Aaron Pierre and Kelvin Harrison Jr.
I don't know. Previous to this moment, I didn't know what it would take for me to not want to see a Barry Jenkins film. And it might be Mufasa. And I'm going to back off that a little bit. I think as much as I enjoy Sam's title here, I would want to see all of these, but in the case of Mufasa and in the case of Twisters, it's probably a morbid curiosity. I mean, I believe in Jenkins' talent. I have to believe we've said this for so many auteurs who have taken on Marvel or Disney projects that something of that will come through. And in some cases it has, not always, not frequently, but it can, it has. And so I like to think that will be the case with Jenkins, but man, do I wish he was doing something else. So I think that leaves me, and as you were reading it, I really had not decided. I think Folie à Deux, A Quiet Place, Day One.
No kidding.
Lupita Nyong'o, I really loved A Quiet Place. Lupita Nyong'o alone in that cast gives me confidence. And, you know, if you're going to revisit something, this is an interesting way to do it. Yes, it's a it's a prequel, but the whole concept there of setting us of the first film in the aftermath of this attack does make you curious. It's something you're asking as you're watching that film. What might it have been like? And I think we get at least one quick little snippet or flashback. And so I'm open to revisiting this story in this way with this cast and with Sarnowski as director.
Yeah, I can see that. The fact that it's Sarnowski, those movies have been successful, and I don't just mean at the box office. They've been effective, crowd-pleasing movies. I have been entertained by the two previous installments. I'll probably be entertained by this one, and the fact that you've got Lupita Nyong'o in a key role is a real selling point for it. That said, Josh, here again, I'm going to be very boring. The director ultimately is the deciding factor. And whatever lack of interest I may have in this Mufasa project, this is a director who's made two of the best films of the last 10 years in Moonlight and If Beale Street Could Talk. And whatever it is that's drawing him to this material, I'm hoping, as you said, it will come through. It will come through and I'll get a sense of his personal fingerprint on the material. It's enough to have me curious anyway, more curious actually than I am about A Quiet Place, and definitely way more curious than I am about a sequel to the 1996 Jean de Bont film Twister.
Sound strategy, and I would agree. If you're going that route, if you're going to follow the director, Jenkins is the way to go. All right, our last pairing here. Broadway Comes to the Art House. You have to choose between Janet Planet and The Piano Lesson. Two movies I was unfamiliar with until we started getting information for this show. Here are the directors. Janet Planet is from writer-director Andy Baker, a Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright. She made The Flick, The Aliens, and the recent Infinite Life. This will be her feature directing debut. The Piano Lesson comes from director Malcolm Washington. It's a film adaptation of the 2022 Broadway production of August Wilson's 1987 Pulitzer Prize-winning play. This is Washington's feature directing debut. He is, by the way, yes, the son of Denzel and the brother of John David. So here's a little bit about the plot and the cast. In Janet Planet, we are in rural Western Massachusetts, where 11-year-old Lacey spends the summer of 1991 at home, enthralled by her own imagination and the attention of her mother, Janet. Julianne Nicholson and Sophie Okonedo star. So Janet Planet premiered at the 2023 Telluride Film Festival. It also played the New York Film Fest. Distributor, A24, always promising. It's set to play the Berlin Film Fest in February and will hopefully get a release date here in the U.S. after that. We do have an endorsement, a very high one from David Sims here, 4.5 stars on Letterboxd. He wrote, "I knew Annie would be able to bring her pregnant pauses and perfect understated characterizations to the screen. I just didn't know she'd also be able to capture exactly how the air feels and sounds in late August." Promising praise there from David Sims. All right, The Piano Lesson. This is set in 1936, where an ornately carved piano becomes a point of contention between siblings. John David Washington does star in this under his brother's direction. Also in the cast, Samuel L. Jackson, Corey Hawkins, and Danielle Deadwyler. Netflix is producing this one. They, you may remember, also produced the 2020 August Wilson adaptation, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. No release date yet for The Piano Lesson. All right, a lot there, Adam. A lot of talent to consider. Which of these Broadway going to the art house films are you going to pick?
I was sure, or I know that I felt when I first saw this matchup that Janet Planet was the choice because I love The Flick. Great play. Seen it performed at Steppenwolf, read the play, so good. And I really like Sims's take because that's exactly what I was concerned about. The notion that one of her signature elements or the thing that's kind of the trademark Annie Baker thing, it's those pauses. It's that dryly observational approach she takes to the theater and whether or not that can translate to the screen. Not that all sorts of slow cinema doesn't work, if this even qualifies as slow cinema, but in the theater, I'm a little bit more willing, I suppose, to get lost in that moment and to let the pace of it and the rhythm of it unfold as it will. And wasn't quite sure if that would translate to the screen. And you heard from David, he says it absolutely does. But then I thought about this, Josh. I thought about the fact that you may recall this. There is my great trauma surrounding The Piano Lesson, which is that last January when we were there for we were in New York for our rap party in Brooklyn, myself, Sam, my daughter, Sophie, we got tickets to see The Piano Lesson on Broadway with John David Washington and Samuel L. Jackson.
That's right.
And what happened? Sam Jackson, about 3 days before, announced that he had to skip town for a little bit, take care of some other business, and wasn't going to be in that weekend's productions. We saw his understudy, and his understudy was quite good, Josh, but suffers from the affliction of not being Samuel L. Jackson.
Sure.
So the fact that I still have not had my opportunity to see Sam Jackson on the stage is something that burns me up a little bit, but maybe seeing him on the screen in this role will help a little bit. Add in Corey Hawkins.
Yeah.
Great film actor, but also a classically trained theater actor. And you know what name you didn't get there that I'm a little surprised actually Sam didn't throw in? Maybe it's just because he was copying and pasting that plot description from somewhere else. But the other key role here, the key supporting role, is actually Ray Fisher as Lyman, who plays the John David Washington character's main running buddy. And Fisher is in. I thought maybe Hawkins, when I saw the name, Hawkins might be playing that role instead. I could see why they might go with a bigger name actor, screen actor than Ray Fisher. But no, he's in the cast. He's reprising his role as Lyman. And that performance, Josh, is such an idiosyncratic, mannered but hilarious and touching performance. It's the kind of performance, though, that kind of like what I was saying about Annie Baker in the flick, like it takes its own time, it takes on its own rhythms. You kind of have to just get on board with it. And over the course of watching that character develop, watching that performance develop, you get on board, or at least I did in a major way. I know many others did as well. Will that translate to the screen? Not entirely sure. On stage, Ray Fisher almost steals the show completely from John David Washington, and he's the character who's brash and bigger than life. It's Fisher who's like I said, idiosyncratic, but still very subtle and a quieter character, and he really does almost take the whole thing away. Now, whether or not he takes anything away from Samuel L. Jackson, again, I didn't have the chance to see that. My only chance to see it, unfortunately, is going to be on Netflix when this movie comes out. And I do really like the August Wilson play. And again, I like those performances, all the ones I saw. So bring in Danielle Deadwyler, bring in Corey Hawkins. Sounds like they could only make it better. I'm really eager to see The Piano Lesson.
Yeah, you got to pick it. You got to make things right. That makes sense. This is tough without having all that background, just looking at the talent involved and the prospect of the stories. There's something that feels intrigued by both. But if I have to choose, there's something that feels a little prepackaged about The Piano Lesson.
Sure.
And honestly, it may be that Netflix producing thing as the capper where I was like, oh, and this is coming from someone who really loved Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. So
yeah,
so
I did too.
That doesn't mean I'm like tossing it out just because of that. But that's where I'm kind of like, oh, not quite sure. So for me, Fale Adu, Janet Planet.
With that, it's time to put a bow here on our 2024 movie preview. We will get to, real quick, our top five, just purely most anticipated of the year, maybe a title or two, maybe only one title for me, Josh, that hasn't already come up. We'll see what the case is with you. But we do have, finally, poll results. You've heard some of the poll feedback already. We asked you a few weeks ago to name your most anticipated film of 24. The options we gave you were Dune Part 2, Furiosa, Robert Eggers' Nosferatu, Bong Joon-ho's Mickey 17, which is a film we're not sure is going to get a 2024 release anymore. I think it was scheduled for sometime in March. Right now, push back. We'll see. Or you could go with Other and write in your choice. How did it come out, Josh?
Other is in last place with 5%. Then Robert Eggers' Nosferatu, 15% of the vote. Furiosa, 20% of the vote, in the middle of the pack here. Interesting. Mickey 17, man, I really hope it does come out this year because it received 21% of the vote and got second place. But taking this was Dune Part 2 with 39% of the vote.
Jonathan Hickey says, it has to be Dune 2. After the trailer was released last year, I was hyped to journey back to Arrakis. So when Warner Brothers postponed the film, it was a major disappointment. It's a tough choice, but I don't want to live in a world where I don't get to see Austin Butler as Fade Rautha. Me too, Josh. I mean, I don't know how many times I've said it. If I had a nickel for every time I've heard you say it.
I know. It's all we talk about on Slack. Josh Ashenmiller weighing in here. I'm definitely not on the edge of my seat for Dune 2. Paul Atreides and the Deathly Hallows. And I found Eggers the Northman paint by numbers. And I thought Bong's Parasite had a flawed climax. So I'm less excited about Mickey 17 and Nosferatu. It's Furiosa by a mile. A dusty diesel-soaked mile. Come on, we all want to find out what happened to Furiosa's arm.
We do. Josh Ashenmiller just throwing haymakers there. Here's Elizabeth Smith. Nosferatu, hands down. Honestly, I'd be looking forward to it no matter who was directing, but it feels like the perfect fit for Eggers. I've loved everything he's done so far, including The Northman.
Here's a note from our good friend Aaron Teachman. As much as I love Fury Road, there's no guarantee that such alchemy will be repeated with Furiosa. I love Dune, and I hope that they will continue that story with as much verve and aplomb. Robert Eggers always chooses amazing collaborators and tells vivid stories, so perhaps his take on Nosferatu will be something special. But if I only get to see one movie, I want the capacity to be surprised, to be taken someplace completely unexpected while still providing insight and empathy. And there is no one I trust with that assignment more than Bong Joon-ho. Mickey 17, I don't know you, but I would love to make your acquaintance.
Finally, Jeremy Laffery. As much as I like all of these choices, somehow one of the least deeply flawed polls in recent memory, I'm compelled to go with I Saw the TV Glow, directed by Jane Schoenbrunn. Schoenbrunn directed one of the finest, most formally audacious, most understated, and most unnerving horror films of the 21st century so far. That's 2022's We're All Going to the World's Fair, and we will note it was a 2022 Golden Brick nominee here on Film Spotting. Schoenbrunn's understanding of the internet and its effect on our identities, emotions, beliefs, and delusions is something I've yet to see matched by any filmmaker of this generation so far. Plus, who can resist voting for a film that marks the film debut of indie folk darling Phoebe Bridgers? Well, I like the addition of Bridgers, or knowing that Bridgers is part of the cast, but yeah, saw some really good buzz, Josh, out of Sundance, and we were already in on whatever Schoenbrunn was doing next.
Absolutely. Not in my top five most anticipated, as we will see, but I think it's like I got it at number eight.
Yeah, David Ehrlich, 4.5 stars, said Schoenbrunn makes the leap from outsider artist to A24 stamped auteur. I forgot, we do have Sean in Seattle who said Megalopolis,
yeah.
Francis Ford Coppola. I'm so excited for this one, and I hope it's every bit as good as Coppola has envisioned.
Bring it on.
I don't know. We will surely see. This is as good a time as any to mention several intriguing titles that have all reportedly wrapped and might get a release this year. They also might not, Josh. Why don't you list a few of these quickly?
So yeah, Megalopolis, Adam Driver in this one, Lawrence Fishburne, Forest Whitaker, Dustin Hoffman, and apparently many others. Man, I hope that comes out. We will, I hope, get Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, of course, the third film in that trilogy. Steve McQueen is back with the World War II set Blitz that stars Saoirse Ronan. Terrence Malick's, this isn't going to happen. Come on. Why is this even on here? Terrence Malick's The Way of the Wind. It may have even changed titles, but this is supposedly a dramatization of several episodes in the life of Christ. We'll see. Would love to get it this year. Not sure it's going to happen. How about the Sean Baker sex worker comedy Anora? Of course, we want a new Sean Baker film. Yorgos Lanthimos's Kind of Kindness, described as three separate stories with the cast playing different characters in each. Emma Stone back with Lanthimos in this one alongside Jesse Plemons, Hong Chau, and Willem Dafoe. And yeah, we've mentioned Mickey 17. That one, it was originally set for a March release, got pulled from the schedule, so there are rumors maybe they did that because they want it to premiere at Cannes in May, which of course would mean we'd likely get it then this year.
I said titles galore, maybe one or two more titles, maybe more, that haven't come up yet as we finally get to our top five most anticipated. Just the five movies, if we could only see five this year. We've heard some great titles so far, but if we could only see five movies, Josh, what would they be? Hit me with your top five.
Okay, number one, it is Furiosa. Somehow I'm a little less excited after we gave our kind of all qualms and qualifications, but still, I've got it there at number one. Number two, The McQueen, we just mentioned. Blitz. I mean, a new McQueen film I'm in no matter what, and this setting is particularly intriguing. I really just want to... When's the last time we've gotten something? This is my number three, Megalopolis. Something like this that you've heard about for... Has it been more than a decade we've been hearing about this movie? It might possibly be, and I just hope we get it so we can all wrestle with it. My number four, here's a title that has not come up at all. The Nickel Boys. So this is an adaptation of a Colson Whitehead novel I have not read, about a boy being sent to reform school after being falsely convicted of a crime. Here's the real catch for me. The director, Ramel Ross, and he made a very small documentary a couple of years ago, Hale County This Morning, This Evening. It was ravishing, made my top 10 in 2018. And have been waiting for a follow-up from him. And so that's The Nickel Boys. I've got that at number four. And topping out my top five, Civil War, the Alex Garland.
So we have some crossover there. I did, for this exercise, try to exclude a movie or any movie that didn't have a set release date in 2024. I think we both would have Mickey 17 as a lock.
Oh, yeah,
for our top five, right? Probably our top three if it was eligible. I've got Furiosa, Mad Max Saga also at number one.
Nice.
I don't care if he's got Joel Cohn with him or not. He's still a cone. And yes, Drive Away Dolls is my second most anticipated film of the year. The other one is the new Soderbergh. I can't wait to be terrified by Presence. I guess that one doesn't really have a release date. Sam swears to me it will come out in 2024. He must have a direct line to Soderbergh. Number four for me is Garland's Civil War. And then at number five, I've got a title. This is the first title for me that has not been said out of 30 plus movies we've referenced so far. At number five, I've got another Austin Butler joint. I love me some Jeff Nichols. Supposed to come out last year.
Oh, Bike Riders.
But the Bike Riders coming out this year. Butler, Tom Hardy, again, Jeff Nichols, the director of that movie. I'm excited. Comes out June 21st. So that rounds out my top five. Josh, you can find all of those titles. The most anticipated are Deathmatch choices, all at filmspotting.net. Just click on lists, and that's our show.
If you want to connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, or Letterboxd, Adam is at Filmspotting, and I'm at Larson on Film. The current Film Spotting poll asks you to choose one and only one 50s Hitchcock film. It's not as easy as you probably think. For show t-shirts or other merch, you can go to filmspotting.net/shop. Film Spotting is listener supported. Join the Film Spotting family at filmspottingfamily.com. For as little as $5 a month, you can listen to the show early and ad free. You can also get a weekly newsletter, monthly bonus shows, and access to the entire Film Spotting archive. That's all at filmspottingfamily.com.
Out in wide release this weekend, Miller's Girl, starring Martin Freeman and Jenny Ortega, in a drama about a young writer and her teacher. Streaming, you can see Under the Fig Trees, a 2021 Tunisian film just getting its U.S. release now. Robert Daniels, in his 4.5-star Letterboxd blurb, calls it an immaculate slice of life. Mariah E. Gates called it resplendent. Good word. In limited release, you can see Inside the Yellow Cocoon Shell. This is the winner of the Best First Feature Award at the 2023 Cannes Film Fest. That's also available VOD. If you want to prepare for Megalopolis, you could see Francis Ford Coppola's One from the Heart, a reprise. That's playing at the Siskel Film Center. Also out, Sometimes I Think About Dying. I remember this film, Josh, getting so much buzz coming out of Sundance last January. It won the grand jury prize there. Daisy Ridley is the star, one I definitely want to catch up with. Next week, what are we going to do? We've kicked around a few different options. Right now, it does feel like with the Oscar nominations, we might need to give American Fiction the Film Spotting review treatment, but a couple other options in the mix as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've both missed Ava DuVernay's Origin. That's an option. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Rear Window at 70, preparation for Film Spotting Madness, Best of the 1950s. Do I force myself to do the Rear Window versus Vertigo and have to choose?
Yeah.
And we revisit both. And I finally, no, we don't, I don't want to do that to myself. Rear Window. Just leave me alone.
We need to see if Josh sends himself into a complete identity crisis.
Let's not, please.
So I will say about Origin, actually, just real quick to clarify, can't wait to see it. I think it sounds fascinating. Where I'm located, which is not Chicago these days, I can't currently see it. Does it come out till February 3rd here? So unless I can pull a few strings, Origin may not quite be on the docket, but one I'm definitely going to see. So stay tuned to our social media, filmspotting.net. If you go to the episodes page, that's where we list our upcoming show topics. Check it out there. We'll eventually have you updated.
Film Spotting is produced by Golden Joe Dassault and Sam Van Halgren. Without Sam and Golden Joe, this show wouldn't go. Our production assistant is Veronica Phillips. Special thanks to everyone at WBEZ Chicago. More information is available at WBEZ.org. For Film Spotting, I'm Josh Larson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. Thanks for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Film Spotting is listener supported. Join the Film Spotting family at filmspottingfamily.com and get access to ad-free episodes, monthly bonus shows, our weekly newsletter, and for the first time, all in one place, the entire Film Spotting archive going back to 2005. That's at filmspottingfamily.com.